responsibility by saying that the tank commander decided to retreat to avoid harm to the thousands of Gazans that were there and claimed no Israeli military strike was conducted toward the aid convoy. He claimed that similar aid operations took place the previous 4 nights without incident. The massacre was applauded by the Zionist regime's public security minister Itamar Ben-Gvir and celebrated on popular Hebrew language telegram channels. A majority of Jewish Zionists opposed the transfer of humanitarian aid to Gaza. In a statement published on its telegram channel, the resistance movement Hamas rejected the Israeli regime's spokesperson's claims as baseless lies intended to cover up this heinous crime and to evade widespread international condemnation. Ashraf Al-Ghadra, spokesperson for the Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza, accused the child killer regime of Israel of carrying out a premeditated massacre. It is not clear who sent the 8 trucks, with some people saying that it was a trap. The Euromed Human Rights Monitor said that Palestinians in the area received phone calls from the Israeli army in recent days ordering them to evacuate to the central and southern parts of the strip in order to receive food and water and avoid starvation. Yosri Al-Ghul, a Palestinian novelist and eyewitness to the massacre, told Al Jazeera that there were no international or any local institutions that said that they sent aid to Gaza City. He said that every day people gather in the area near the Israeli regime tanks in anticipation of aid deliveries. Al-Ghul said, "We are starving. We don't find food, even the food of animals, for about 2 months. Our children are starving. While children die from lack of food, their parents are killed trying to get it for them." Jason Lee, Save the Children's Palestine director, said, adding, "We need a definitive ceasefire immediately," echoing the long-standing call from humanitarian actors operating in Gaza.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahan Abbott, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Afghanistan's reliance on Pakistan for access to international markets has been a long-standing challenge. However, recent disputes have pushed the Taliban authorities to seek alternatives. The Taliban have said they will invest around $35 million in Iran's Chabahar port, located in the country's southeast. The move aims to reduce Afghanistan's economic dependence on Pakistan, which has been marred by political friction and trade disruptions.
Chabahar is one of the most important economic and trade routes for Afghanistan. The Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan tries to have a strong bilateral economic and trade relations with Iran as part of its economic policy. This port allows Afghanistan to broaden its trade with Iran, West Asia, and Europe. That's why we are specially focused on Chabahar and seek to invest there.
Analysts believe this could be a turning point for Afghanistan's international trade relations. They say that Iran has been an ideal trade partner for Afghanistan, and accessing Chabahar port will further facilitate Afghanistan's regional cooperation.
The benefits of Chabahar port for Afghanistan include its short distance with the country's borders. It allows goods to enter our country at a low price. It is especially suitable with the overall economic situation of Afghans. Another benefit is that it opens a big route for our exports, which is in dire need of expansion. When we become able to expand our exports, our economy will grow rapidly.
As the Taliban government seeks to diversify its trade routes and reduce its reliance on Pakistan, the decision to invest in Iran's Chabahar port marks a significant shift in Afghanistan's economic strategy. Experts say the outcome of this move will not only impact Afghanistan's relations with Pakistan, but also shape the geopolitical dynamics in the region. Iran and Afghanistan have the potential and opportunity to cooperate in many fields. Trade and industry in particular can bring the two neighbors closer in a very volatile region. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The recent European Council President Charles Michel's warning that the European Union needs to ramp up its military production and shift to a war economy mode in response to an alleged threat posed by Russia has sparked international alarm and mixed reactions in Europe. Earlier this week, Michel wrote in an opinion editorial run by a media specialized in EU affairs that if Europe wants peace, it must prepare for war, arguing that although the EU's military manufacturing capacity has increased by 50% since the start of the Ukraine-Russia war in 2022, far more was needed.
Our European awakening is just beginning to take shape, and I would like to tell you what I feel. The time has come to create a real union of defense coupled with a true defense single market.
Michel added that the European Union must finally take responsibility for its own security.
For decades, the European Union has relied heavily on the United States and the Western military alliance, NATO, for its security. Analysts believe that the dependency on external powers by the 27-member bloc has resulted in a complete loss of its own geopolitical and strategic autonomy.
In questo momento,
at this point in time, the EU cannot be militarily independent. It can't adopt autonomous strategies. Today, Europe must create its own defense system so that in 30 years' time, it can really be geopolitically autonomous. If we continue to put national interests ahead, all individual states, including Italy, would lose geopolitical relevance.
Michel's remarks come as Ukrainian and international politicians and experts are warning that ammunition shortages are resulting in the losses of territory to Russia.
Michel is trying to keep Germany under pressure, demanding together with the French government that Berlin provide Ukraine with long-range cruise missiles Taurus. German Chancellor Scholz has so far said no to this request to avoid a war escalation, adding that his country has already provided Kiev with arms for 7 billion euros, while France is struggling to pay for Ukraine military aid.
On Wednesday, the Italian former Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte accused the current Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni of dragging Italy into World War III after having turned the country into an irrelevant, subjugated power. Max Civili, Rome.
Nowruz, the beginning of the Persian New Year, has always given energy and hope to people celebrating the event to observe Iranian traditions and enter the new year with a totally fresh spirit. The arrival of Nowruz for Iranians is tantamount to shopping spree and finishing their undone work. Millions of Iranians embrace the turn of the Persian year and celebrate the spring festival with many ceremonial customs waiting to be observed.
Well, everybody is busy shopping. It is time of Nowruz and the new year. I have bought sabze, sweets and fruits. We're waiting for the new year to arrive.
Sofre half seen is unique, symbolic for the Nowruz festivity and its tradition. The half seen spread includes 7 items, all starting with the letter seen in the Persian alphabet. Iranians say there's a history behind each element, including serke, vinegar, symbolizes patience and immortality, sumac represents love and compassion, sib, apple, is a symbol of health and fertility, senjit, silverberry, is seen as a simulator of love and affection, sabze, sprouts, symbolizes rebirth, seer or garlic, is a symbol of protection in the face of affliction, and samanu represents affluence. This year it's different, as it has coincided with Ramadan, so we visit our family members and parents after iftar, and yes, it is great. Nowruz is a unique opportunity for families and relatives to get together and visit each other. That is why Nowruz is regarded as a cultural bridge which unites people. This year, as Nowruz holidays coincide with the holy month of Ramadan, family members will most likely meet up after sunset or time of iftar when those who are fasting break their fast. Nowruz has begun and the Iranians are celebrating it as an ancient festivity to mark the first day of spring and the renewal of life and nature. This year, Nowruz has a different flavor to it as the Iranians are celebrating it with the holy month of Ramadan together, making it an exception. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
Earlier this month, the Maidenhead constituency in southeast England woke up to the resignation of its Conservative MP of 27 years, former Prime Minister Theresa May. Hers was one of up to 100 other well-established as well as younger MPs across the political parties announcing they wouldn't be running in the yet-to-be-announced next general election. Scottish Nationalist Party member Martin Day explains why so many are choosing to go.
For some, it's just age. They've reached retirement age and they're going. For others, they've got family commitments and they want to do that or other things with their lives. But for some, it's the toxic nature of politics. It's the toxic nature on social media where they're being trolled. And for some, they're actually being physically stalked and threatened with violence.
One MP, Caroline Lucas, the Parliament's only Green MP of 14 years, has cited the dysfunctionality of Parliament as her reason.
This Parliament has always been dysfunctional. I think perhaps one of the benefits of social media and modern television is that we see it more. It's not fit for this 21st century. I don't think it was fit for the 20th century. It's a Victorian construct, and it worked in their day. It doesn't work in our day. We should have electronic voting, we should have proportional representation systems, and we shouldn't have an unelected second chamber.
But while resignations are not uncommon ahead of a general election, it is different this time round. At least as far as the ruling Tories are concerned.
Well, you've heard the phrase, rats deserting a sinking ship. Clearly, the Tory ship is sinking, and that's why so many of them are jumping overboard and seeking refuge elsewhere.
Britons will vote in local elections in May. The Tories are 26 points behind the opposition Labour Party in opinion polls. Pressure is growing on Prime Minister Rishi Sunak to call an early national vote.
As it stands, there won't be a general election in May, but one in the second half of the year seems more likely. Nevertheless, catastrophic results in the upcoming local elections could mean that Rishi Sunak and his Conservative Party's days in power are numbered. Saeed Purizap, London.
South Korea this week hosts the third U.S. initiative of the Summit for Democracy. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken suggested America could lead the world toward democratic ideals lacking elsewhere.
Vitalizing democracy will also require us to shape a technological future that's inclusive, that's rights-respecting, directed at driving progress in people's lives. As authoritarian and repressive regimes deploy technologies to undermine democracy and human rights, we need to ensure that technology sustains and supports democratic values and norms.
Corralled away from the venue, activists were joined by a South Korean lawmaker to question Washington's and Seoul's credibility, particularly in light of U.S. support of Israel's ongoing genocide of Palestinians in Gaza.
Since Yoon Suk-yeol came into power, our democracy index has fallen by 19 points, and we're turning into a very backward country in terms of democracy. The United States, the enabler of the massacre, Israel, the perpetrator of the massacre, and South Korea are causing the endless decline of democracy.
Activists say the U.S. and South Korea have the blood of tens of thousands of innocents on their hands through the provision of weapons to Israel and failure to pressure Tel Aviv to end its genocide.
It's not the time for the South Korean government or the U.S. government, who are complicit in Israel's genocide, to discuss democracy. Instead, the Korean government should urge the U.S. and Israel to immediately stop the genocide, lift the blockade of the Gaza Strip, and end Israel's colonial military occupation of Palestine.
While a rift has appeared in U.S. support of Israel, concern is mounting that the Israeli military will increase attacks on the already besieged Rafah, where Palestinians await humanitarian aid amid reports of starvation. Like here, around the world can be found supporters of a free Palestine protesting against Israel's genocide in Gaza week after week. And here at this summit titled Democracy for Future Generations, a glaring question clouds proceedings. What will happen to the next generation of Palestinians? Frank Smith, Seoul.
The people of Afghanistan are facing immense hardship and sorrow, with the country finding itself at the bottom of the World Happiness Report rankings. The report, which evaluates nations based on various factors such as freedom, health, and income, has named Afghanistan as the unhappiest, where almost everyone is very unhappy.
Everyone here agrees with the result of the World Happiness Survey. We are unhappiest, and that is because of the ongoing poverty, unemployment, and lack of freedom and opportunities. Furthermore, girls cannot receive education, which further adds to the misery of Afghan families. When women are despaired, families feel unhappy.
I have been unemployed for almost 3 years. Since then, I have not had any income. My young daughters are missing their school, and this situation is so tough. How can we be happy? The Afghan people have suffered decades of intervention and war, and they have not been happy. But experts say, under the rule of the Taliban, their circumstances have worsened.
The Afghan people have suffered decades of intervention and war, and they have not been happy. But experts say, under the rule of the Taliban, their circumstances have worsened.
As we speak, mental clinics across Kabul are receiving more patients than ever. As a psychologist, I witnessed the rise of mental health problems such as anxiety, stress, and depression. They have even led to suicide. If you take hope away from people, it will result in a depressed and dead nation. Hope is everything for human beings. If it is eroded, all progress will be lost.
The Afghan people are resilient, but the absence of basic human necessities and rights can crush even the strongest will. The international community and the ruling Taliban share a responsibility to bring some hope and light to the life of the crisis-stricken nation. Decades of foreign interventions and war have made Afghans the poorest and the saddest people on the planet. This nation has long yearned for peace and happiness, but it remains to be seen when or whether they find their lost dream. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The appointment of a new Palestinian prime minister at the current circumstances could deepen divisions as the Israeli war on Gaza rages. This is what some Palestinian factions revealed after President Mahmoud Abbas appointed Mohammed Mustafa, a long-trusted advisor on economic affairs, as prime minister and tasked him with forming a new government. Both Hamas and resistance movements, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, and the Palestinian National Initiative said that without national consensus, it's a reinforcement of a policy of exclusion and the deepening of division. We met Dr. Mustafa Al-Barghouti, Secretary General of the National Initiative. He told us that the most important thing is now a unified leadership.
We're not against the new government. we are against the way the government is being formed. We want a national consensus government, a government which is acceptable and accepted by all Palestinian political groups through a national dialogue between the different groups. And that is natural because, and for us, the main goal first before forming a government is how we structure a unified Palestinian national leadership.
Mohammed Mustafa replaces Mohammed Shtayyi, who resigned less than 3 weeks ago, citing the need for real change. Experts, however, say there had been mounting pressure on Abbas to reform the Palestinian Authority and initiate the establishment of a political framework capable of governing a future Palestinian state to take charge of all Palestinian territories after the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza ends.
First of all, that there was a pressure on Palestinian Authority to make some changes, and that's why they complied immediately and appointing Mohammed Mustafa to as the new prime minister. This is on the one hand. On the other hand, which is most importantly as well, what the Palestinians wanted. The Palestinians don't want another government to be the same. The problem here is with Israel. Are they, and the international community, are they able to really make the change and let this government to work or not?
The new prime minister now would work to form a technocratic government of experts. Abbas has also asked Mustafa to create plans to reunite the administration of the West Bank and Gaza Strip, reform the government, and address internal corruption. A real political change, not a change in words only, is what the people here desire. Moreover, the upcoming government faces numerous challenges, namely rebuilding the Gaza Strip, torpedoing Israeli plans to control the coastal enclave, and managing Palestinians' lives. Mona Kandil, Occupy Jamallah.
On Saturday, thousands of people joined a new rally in the Italian capital, organized, among the others, by the movement of the Palestinian students and the Association of the Palestinians in Italy. The initiative, dubbed Stop the Genocide, also saw the participation of high school students and families. People at the rally strongly condemned Italy's unwavering support to the Israeli regime.
Italy, that claims to be a democratic nation, is a country where the government goes against the people's will. Profits always come first, even when a genocide is taking place. I'm teaching my kids to never give up the fight and to never accept being submitted.
The Italian Defense Minister Guido Crosetto has recently said that Rome has continued to export arms to Israel despite assurances last year that the government was blocking such sales following Tel Aviv's invasion of the Gaza Strip. Some Italian media reports recently revealed that despite the Italian government's denials, the value of arms sales to Israel more than tripled in December 2023 compared with the same month in 2022. And December last year was the peak of Israeli bombardments on the Gaza Strip.
Western governments have been systematically supporting Zionism and Israel's criminal regime, notwithstanding the protest against Israel's crimes that have been taking place across the globe. Italy's support to Tel Aviv must stop once and for all.
La soluzione sarebbe...
A solution to the onslaught in Gaza could be found if the international community stopped militarily supporting Israel. Italy, on its side, has been actively arming Israel through companies such as Leonardo and others. If we don't make sure that the Palestinians' right to self-determination is protected, and nothing will ever change.
Earlier this week, more protests and initiatives in solidarity with the besieged Palestinians were held in several Italian cities, including Milan and Naples. Max Civili, Rome.
A growing strategic partnership between Azerbaijan and Iran in the energy sector on full display.
a collaboration that promises to bolster economic development and energy security beyond the borders of the two countries and in the region, as described by the Iranian Minister of Energy and his visiting Azerbaijani counterpart. A highlight of this cooperation is the near completion of hydroelectric power plants on the Aras River, a vital waterway on the Iran-Azerbaijan border, with construction progress reported at 96%. The strategic importance of these hydroelectric projects extends beyond national benefits, signaling a move towards greater energy independence and regional cooperation, including the creation of an energy bridge linking Azerbaijan, Iran, and Russia by connecting Iran and Russia's power grids through the Republic of Azerbaijan. This follows decisions made 2 weeks ago during the 17th Iran-Russia Joint Economic Commission in Tehran to boost economic relations in different fields. Managing shared water resources for energy production lays the groundwork for more mutually beneficial cooperation, which is why the presidents of both countries will be attending the inaugural ceremony. The projects are in the final stages, promising a significant boost in Iran-Azerbaijan bilateral relations, all in line with President Ebrahim Raisi's policy to expand relations with neighboring countries. Gizum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Hazrat Khadija's value has not been properly appreciated. This is the part of the speech delivered on May 9, 2016 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with officials of the Hazrat Khadija Commemoration Congress. It is said about Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba, God's greetings be upon him, that he gave up his entire possessions or half of his belongings several times over his lifetime. This is among the greatest privileges. Hazrat Khadija has the privilege of giving up her entire wealth by dedicating it in the way of promoting Islam and strengthening the Holy Prophet. After that too, she endured many hardships and sufferings, one of which was her 3 years of sufferings in the valley of Abi Talib. There, she endured great sufferings and preserved her strong faith. The Holy Quran says about those people who do charitable work before and after a victory, not equal among you are those who spent freely and fought before the victory with those who did so later. Holy Quran, chapter 57, verse 10. Before the victory means before conquering Mecca. It means that she had donated her money before the Holy Prophet had Medina at his disposal and before he held power and established a government, and while he needed it most.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today.
and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
She dedicated her wealth, her life, and her comfort. Well, these are important virtues which have been forgotten. Therefore, she is really unrecognized. She is really oppressed. Mr. Arafi described her as lonely. This is really the case. Hazrat Khadija, greetings be upon her, is really lonely. You mentioned that she was the mother of 11 Imams, but she was actually the mother of 12 Imams. This is because she is considered the mother of the Commander of the Faithful as well. She raised the Commander of the Faithful under her care and supervision to a certain age. In any case, this is a very good and important endeavor, and by Allah's favor, it will yield many blessings. Anyway, we thank Mr. Arafi, Mr. Rafi, and the other gentlemen who are cooperating on this matter, and I hope that they will receive their rewards from the Holy Prophet, God willing. This endeavor will surely have the approval of God's Messenger. God's greetings be upon him and his household. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. Guiding me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me from all.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, as the Israeli regime's genocide against Palestinians continues, more than 31,600 people have been killed. This includes the slaughtering of over 13,000 infants and kids. As Netanyahu continues to say Israel has a right to defend itself, more and more settler colonialists inside of the regime are protesting and clashing with police. They say regime leaders have created more insecurity for the people and have not freed the captives. The settler colonialists want a change in the regime. This has increasingly some of the regime's closest allies are starting to, at least on the surface, distance themselves from Netanyahu. But in reality, what does it all mean? Well, stay with us as we take a look at all of this and more on The Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Sarah Flounders, International Action Center out of New York. And Sayed Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator out of London. Well, welcome both of you to the program. Let me start it off in New York. And Sarah, is the main problem with the Israeli regime due to Netanyahu being prime minister, or is the reality beyond who is prime minister?
Well, it is far beyond Netanyahu. This is Zionist policy from day one for 75 years and even earlier. But right now, there are U.S. politicians that are desperate to save Israel. as a Zionist outpost for U.S. domination and power in the region. And they seem to think maybe the only way forward is to dump Netanyahu. Clearly, that was true in Senator Schumer's statements the other day, and an increasing number of politicians. They face a real problem, that Israel's global reputation has been absolutely destroyed. It's clearly been proven it's no longer invincible. It's certainly not. The Iron Dome, the new tanks, the missiles, the weapons, they have all been found to be not so invincible at all. But also Israel's reputation, its standing, has been completely destroyed. And overwhelmingly, even here in the U.S., more than two-thirds of the population is for the Palestinians. Now, that's a big problem for U.S. politicians, Democrat and Republican. They're both Zionists, absolutely. But they face an election coming up, so they got to act like they're for something different. Whether there's anything different that's even possible, that's a real question, because everything means they still want Israel to survive, and that is what is being threatened and challenged by a unified resistance.
Well, Said Moussa, we've seen across the board support for the genocide in Gaza from all factions of the Israeli regime, as well as from the settler colonialists on the ground themselves. I mean, your thoughts overall, is there actually a divide between the people and that regime? And is it related to the genocide itself, or is it related to how they are being affected by it all?
Well, it's a very fascinating situation internally. The people, the Jewish occupation of citizenry, etc., is certainly behind the war. They're certainly behind the genocidal tactics being used by Netanyahu, but they're not necessarily for Benjamin Netanyahu himself. He was in trouble long before this war, and in fact, there were all sorts of issues constitutionally and in terms of the grave political, constitutional, and domestic crisis, which he'd brought about through his own efforts to try to reduce the judiciary's power, to increase his own power, to bring in essentially a Jewish religious jurisprudence of a hugely fundamentalist nature. There was hardly anything secular left within the plans that they were rolling out, and essentially he's increased the racist approach to Palestinians, if that could be increased anymore, with the necessity that he's created of support from ultra nationalists, ultra extreme violent Jewish politicians like Smotrich and all the other entourage that have become very infamous across the screens. But in reality also, that public, which is backing the war, which also doesn't necessarily like Netanyahu, is hugely aware now that the entire north part of Israel has been evacuated. So the war, which by extension obviously drew in Hezbollah, has essentially created a huge deal of paranoia. I mean, entire settlements in that northern part of occupied Palestine had to be evacuated. That's one result of this war, which gets little coverage. But the Israeli public is even more insecure as a result of this, because don't forget, what they haven't forgiven Netanyahu for is the failure of security. He was Mr. Security, and yet what he's done in October the 7th has created the biggest amount of paranoia and insecurity among the Israeli public that's ever been known. On top of that, he's failed on the retrieval of hostages. He's failed in terms of wiping out Hamas, which was another pledge of his. What he has done is also undermine Israel's cover story, which was that they were the victims and that the Palestinians were terrorists. Now, well, of course, what's happened is the whole world sees the emperor is naked. Mm-hmm. They can realize that he has no clothes, and that all the lies of the Hasbara are there for the world to see. And I think Israel's standing certainly won't recover from this. What the implications of that are for its long-term survival are, of course, open to debate.
Well, Sarah, the demonstrations on Saturday in Tel Aviv and other cities led to the first major clashing amongst Israelis and security forces since October the 7th. Is this significant and indicative of a transition taking place inside of the regime, in your perspective?
Well, there has been a growing number of demonstrations, disruptions, encampments, vigils going on within Israel among the Zionist forces. They are deeply, completely divided, and the animosity and the failure of security, that rankles deep. And it will grow worse and worse because in the hundreds of thousands, Israelis have left Israel itself, either to avoid being drafted or just wanting no part of this war. That's a big loss. The economy is in shambles. Unemployment is really higher than it's ever been. And their standing in the world is completely shattered and lost. So the divisions are real, and the growing actual fights, repression, you know, so on, are becoming stronger and stronger. The failure on every front of the aims of the war in terms of regaining the hostages, defeating Hamas, all that, here it is more than 5 months in, and they haven't succeeded in anything. So that will mean greater division and greater hostility within the state, which is an illusion from its very beginning. So now you have millions of people waking up and frustrated and angry. So will they break with Zionism? Very few of them, because the racism is so deeply ingrained. But will they break in all kinds of ways against the government? That's what it certainly looks like is happening. And then there also are voices who really were never for this policy, who are becoming more outspoken and gutsy. So there are a lot of tensions going on in Israel today. And also the big thing that everyone in Israel knows is that world support has completely broken and U.S. support is waning. So this is a fragile effort from the very beginning, and now it's in really, you know, bad shape. Israel can't prevail. And as I say, they've lost support everywhere. It's a failed policy. And that will create greater and greater tension, animosity, opposition within the Israeli state.
Well, Said Mohsen, speaking of the captives, I mean, protesters say that Netanyahu has done nothing to try to reach a deal to bring the captives home. Do you think that the reality is that the regime leaders really did not want the captives to be returned home?
Well, the Hannibal Directive is something which is on record, and it's something which the Israeli establishment had decided was going to be a policy, and they've exercised that policy quite ruthlessly. It essentially says that in a situation where hostages or Israeli lives can be saved, and the alternative, of course, is to stop their military actions, they will always plumb for sacrificing the hostages. And that's what Netanyahu has done, essentially. He's actually responsible for directly killing many of those hostages. Many of them have been essentially murdered alongside all those women and children, the 31,000 plus and who've been killed from the Palestinian civilian fraternity. So his own people's blood is on his hands. There are huge questions he has to answer in terms of what his military forces were doing on October the 7th, when they sent in Apache helicopters and mowed down Israeli citizens, essentially. You know, he's got to answer for those issues. So to be honest with you, there is a clear set of evidence that this establishment's incompetence in dealing with this whole situation from start to finish, and it's now very well documented, you know, genocide and ethnic cleansing and starvation of a people who are already destitute and on their last legs is recorded, and he is now spoken. Ultimately, he's going to be spoken in the same breath as names like Pol Pot, Hitler, and Churchill, I'd like to add, because these people were all responsible for some of the biggest genocides of the 20th century. Well, congratulations, Netanyahu, you've managed to get yourself in an auspicious list there, and that won't go away. Israel itself is now also tarred with that brush. Nobody's buying the victim story. But what they will do is they'll try and their advisors are already trying to do this. What they're planning is to meet this challenge by essentially getting new political realignments done in the backgrounds. So Benny Gantz and the National Unity Party, for instance, will be pushed, I think, into the foreground as the replacement. They'll probably try and bring together some kind of coalition, which will try to, patch things over. I mean, they've already tripled their popularity in the various general election polls. So we know that the NUP will be rewarded for this war, and Benny Gantz is the one to watch. But then Benny Gantz's policies are not going to be that different from Netanyahu. He's part and parcel of this Zionist terrorist mindset. And unless they are willing to really give the rights of Palestinians, unless they're willing to concede the land and give people back their properties, allow the repatriation of all Palestinians expelled and their heritage, children who've been born abroad, unless they're willing to settle for a one-state solution which is based on democracy and the rights of Palestinians, we're not going to see an end to this situation.
Right.
And in fact, what's done is they bred an entire generation of Palestinians who will now fight, literally fight, for the return of their people's rights.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Sarah, some of the protesters were saying that the policy has to change by the Israeli regime towards Palestinians, or Israel will no longer exist. Your assessment of that statement, I mean, is there a greater awareness by the settler colonialists that the regime is in danger?
I think so, Marzia, and I very much agree with Syed that what it would take, though, is something which would really mean the end of Zionism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it means the return of these settlements. It means, Israel out of Gaza. It means the end of the attacks. That's the only way, and that seems to be almost an impossibility. That's not on Benny Gantz's agenda or any of the Israeli politicians. So that is the quandary. They have an absolutely failed war. They're no longer clearly invincible. That's been completely destroyed. And dumping Netanyahu or a new coalition government won't fix this, won't solve it. And the U.S. is desperately seeking for a way to act like they're not for this policy, they're for something else. Can they restabilize? And that doesn't seem to be in the works. It's not in the works even because of the actions taken in Yemen by the Ansarallah movement. The blockade, the Israeli ports are all but closed. So while they have imposed a complete closure and created a famine in Gaza, they haven't been able to open their own economy as a thriving economy it was. So they can't seem to prevail anywhere, either economically or militarily. The big win that they expected, it isn't in the cards with any of the Israeli politicians. This is a real crisis that they face, and actually that U.S. imperialism faces, because they have completely banked on Israel from its very foundation, and now they see it literally crumbling. They see the population at each other's throats, and many others just opting to leave out of the whole project. It's a big problem, and it's part of global change that is really happening among many countries, realigning and rethinking where they stand.
Well, speaking of that, actually, of that realignment, said Mohsen, as the regime continues to be adamant about its invasion of Rafah and continues to commit mass murder on a daily basis, do you think that there is real distancing taking place on an international level of some of the international allies of the regime, or is it just for show?
I think there's a lot of show. There's no genuineness about the allies. The allies are fully part and parcel of the genocide. They've been aiding and abetting the murder of the genocide, the ethnic cleansing, with weapons supplies. Hundreds of thousands of tons of weapons from Germany, from Britain, from America have been pouring in. Their alliances are just as solid as they were before. In fact, what one has to realize that Israel is their means for controlling West Asia. But what's happened is that Israel's own, invincibility has been undermined so much that it's putting doubts in erstwhile allies. This is what's really important. The likes of Saudi Arabia, the likes of Jordan, Egypt, all these collaborators in the genocide of Palestine, because don't forget the Saudis have been allowing food and commodities to come through their territories into Jordan via UAE. Don't forget that Egypt has been trying to prevent Yemeni ballistic missiles reaching Israel, and are also wholly and solely responsible for the starvation that's going on also from the Rafah crossing, because they are also absolutely hand in glove with Israel with this policy. So it's this exposure of the regional Israeli allies, covert, many of them previously covert, now are exposed. Saudi Arabia is finding increasingly embarrassing. Turkey and the likes of Azerbaijan have been exposed for their oil exports. So Israel's actions have actually exposed all of the collaborators, and the public knows. The Arab public in the region now knows. And I think that realization isn't going to go away. It will affect those governments, and it's also exposed the likes of the Zionist Western establishment clearly. And China and
Russia. Stay with me, said Mohsen, because I only have a couple of minutes left. I want to get a couple more questions in. Well, Sarah, U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer, a staunch Zionist supporter of the regime in Washington, has said that Netanyahu has lost his way and is an obstacle to peace. What are your thoughts on why Schumer is saying that now, and what does it really mean?
Well, Schumer is an arch Zionist, strongest Zionist, longest supporter of Israel in the U.S., top representative. So Netanyahu has lost his way, and it just means Schumer is in a panic, how to distance himself from this politician who's now radioactive. That is the problem. And so Schumer's got to act like he's for something different. What it is, he doesn't say. And frankly, he doesn't know. That is what they can't overcome. And it's also true in the U.S., in Britain. These are the supporters. The EU, these are the supporters of Zionism from the very beginning, and now, frankly, they are scared, they are worried, and they don't have an option. That this is the quandary that they're in.
Okay.
And the regime that were complicit in Western Asia, and I'm talking about, as I did, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt, they're also now looking east. They are looking to new relations. There no longer is the U.S. and the, that imperialist economy, the only game in town.
Okay, stay with me, Sarah. So sorry to interrupt you. And said Mohsen, at the end of the day, is there anything besides, or any group besides the resistance that is going to bring this genocide against Palestinians in Gaza to an end?